Hello and welcome to Python Bytes, where we deliver Python news and headlines directly to your earbuds. This is episode 379, recorded April 16th, and I am Brian Aachen.
And I'm Michael Kennedy.
This week, we are sponsored by us, Talk Python training courses, and also the PyTest course, and our Patreon supporters. We love everybody that supports us. We really appreciate it. And if you'd like to connect with us, we're all on Fostodon, on Mastodon. So it's at M. Kennedy, at Brian Aachen, and at Python Bytes. And I wanted to shout out to myself, I guess, and Michael for we're doing a newsletter now. So if you head over to pythonbytes.fm and join the Friends of the Show list, we will send you an email with all of the tidbits. So if you happen to miss an episode, you can catch up on all the links that we share. So. Michael, why don't you kick us off with our first topic?
Let's get started, huh? So I want to talk about an article by Stephanie Mullen. She put together this really nice article on something that I don't use very much, Git pre-commit hooks. Do you use Git pre-commit hooks?
On some projects.
Yeah, and I just think there's a lot of possibility for interesting things there. And, you know, I've considered it, but... You don't want stuff that like takes a long time to run there. So like how much value do you get? But nowadays with tools like Ruff and others that run really quickly, it's basically you wouldn't even really notice it, right? So it's not a lot of overhead. So maybe it's time to reconsider Git pre-commit hooks. And she has a really nice walkthrough here. So I just kind of want to set out some of the motivation and kind of call attention to this article. People can come check it out and set up pre-commit hooks for themselves. So why do you care about these things? They give developers near instant feedback of code locally. So not all, but some of the things that would run in continuous integration, like linting checks and other types of checks run. And when you try to do a Git commit, and if it, for some reason there's a problem, right? Like it won't even let you commit. It'll say, no, can't commit. You got to fix the issue detected by the pre-commit hook. So it's kind of a gate before stuff actually gets into broader source control world. And, you know, super valuable if you're on a team, but also if you just want to make sure, like, hey, I kind of want to make sure I'm doing this for myself, for my own project, or I'm working alone at a company and I still want to make sure these things happen, then throw them in there. That's for you. Also, the continuous integration side of thing is pretty excellent. So here she's using a project, I believe, by Anthony Sotili called Precommit. And Precommit is a Python project, but it's not only for Python things in Git and source control. It just happens to run on Python. Like some things run on C, some things run on Rust. This one runs on Python. So basically, as long as you can run Python things, you have an interpreter, you can use Precommit for whatever project. You know, if you're a React Native person, you could use Precommit for it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a nice example of showing how to set up a bunch of checks. And it's super easy. Basically, you set up pre-commit-config-yaml file, or .yaml, and then you specify different things to run. And so you can say, I want to run the hooks for, check the format for the TOML file, check the format for YAML files, make sure that every file ends with a blank line, trim out all white, trailing white space, all those kinds. Those are all pretty simple and pretty nice, right?
Yes.
Another one is throw in the Ruff pre-commit, and then I'll just say run Ruff and run Ruff format, which will fix up the things. And you can even pass arguments to it through these pre-commit hooks here, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so you know that's pretty much it. Once you set up your file, you just have to run pre-commit install, which will download all the hooks that you've mentioned that you want to run, all the checkers. And it'll actually create virtual environments for those and install them in there. So the first time it's a little bit slow, but then the next time it's plenty quick. And finally, if for some reason you're like, you know what? I know it keeps complaining, but this time I just need it to commit because for whatever reason, you can use down here, find it. You can specify git commit dash dash no verify. And that'll just say it's going in. I don't care. It's going in if you need to kind of override it. So yeah, it's pretty straightforward, really nice write up. And people can check that out if the idea appeals.
This is a great timing for this because I have used it in years past, and there's times where I've added like a whole bunch of stuff and it kind of slows down my process. But with the recent rustification of a lot of our tools, like with Ruff and stuff, things are pretty zippy now. So I don't think it'll slow down things that much.
Yeah. I doubt you'd really even notice it, you know?
Yeah, for depending on other what kind of tools you have.
When it fails, you'll notice.
Yeah, and I do like the shout out. There's a couple things I love about this. I like the shout out to the No Verify, because there's times where you're just running off to vacation and you have to commit your stuff no matter what. Get that in there, especially if it's on a branch, developer branch or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. If it's not on the main branch, but you're like, you know what, I'm just going to put it here because I want to get it over to my laptop and I'm leaving.
Yeah, I need it saved. The other thing is running down some of the rough settings. So I love some of the configuration that she's included with like how to configure rough, because rough is awesome by default, but there's some cool configuration you can do, like setting the quote style to single and stuff like that. So neat.
Indeed. Very, very neat. Yeah, Stephanie's doing a bunch of cool stuff, so people should check out broadly what she's up to, but this article is really nice.
Yeah.
All right, over to you, Ryan.
Well, I want to talk about something I talked about 2 years ago. So I was researching this Diff-tastic, and I'm like, I'm really loving this tool. I got to cover it. And I apparently covered it 2 years ago, but I didn't, I haven't started using it until just recently. So Diff-tastic is a tool, and I think it's written in Rust. I'm not sure, actually. But it's a super fast diff tool, and it does coloring, but there's a lot of stuff I love about it. The reasons why I'm using it a lot. The colors are great, by the way. Awesome. Nice red, green, different colors. What I really love is that it's a diff tool. That's not a line by line, character by character diff. It understands your syntax, and it only changes things that really change. So if you happen to add a new line in there or something, it's not going to show you that diff. It's going to do just real changes to your code, which is super helpful. I hate it when you have to like turn off by default, it doesn't show you that. So I don't like to see if I messed up some spacing and somebody fixed that, that's not a real diff. I don't need to see that. So having syntax based is great. What I really love is what I'm going to highlight here is there's instructions, tells you how to do it, and I can't remember where the link is, but I'm going to show it right here. The in the manual for Git-tastic or Diff-tastic, it shows you how to set this up for diff, so you can, or for Git diff. So if you're using it with Git, and you know you want to just try it out, it shows you how to just set your Git external diff, and then you can try it out. What I really love is the real winner is doing a log. So showing what you've done on the file recently is great with the Git log, but if you do that with the external diff of Diff-tastic, it's a fantastic experience, especially if you've got a large screen, which I do right now. And it just makes things working with Git so much easier. So definitely, if you haven't tried Diff-tastic yet, try it and try the, so it shows you how to do it just like one-offs for Git, but it shows you how to set up your, Git config so that you can use it all the time. So this is fantastic.
Yeah, very excellent. Are you starting to use it?
I'm using it every day now. It's just part of my workflow. So yeah.
Interesting. Mike Fiedler out in the audience says Diff-tastic is indeed in Rust.
Yeah, it's one of those super fast. I love. I'm gonna have to start learning Rust, I guess, maybe, but or just I just love other people writing Rust for me so that I can write my exactly. Python even faster.
So it's like it's kind of like when you use Jupyter notebooks. You don't have to learn TypeScript and JavaScript and all those things. You can just use them and appreciate that someone else took one for the team.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Awesome.
All right. Actually, speaking exactly of that kind of stuff, the next thing I wanted to give a shout out to here, the next topic is Corto. Have you heard of Corto?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. So Corto is pretty cool. It lives solidly in the I want to publish stuff for various reasons. Maybe because I want a blog or a website, or I want to write an ebook, or I just want to create a web page that shows my research or visualizations for my company or something like that. So basically, it's an open source scientific and technical publishing system based on Jupyter Notebooks. And a lot of people have been talking about this and recommending this lately. So I thought I'd give it a look. And so the idea is you write in Jupyter Notebooks with plain text or Markdown or whatever you want to use. And then you create the dynamic elements in Python, R, Julia, or Observable. Observable has always been an adjective. I didn't know it was a noun, but okay. yeah, I may have to check that out later. But basically, most relevant point is you can write your stuff in Python, and then you can create production quality articles, dashboards, websites, blogs, and even EPUB books. So HTML, PDF, even Word, EPUB, and so on, which is pretty awesome. And then it comes out of the POSIT folks. You can connect it to POSIT Connect if you want. But then you can write in Pandoc Markdown as well and get like fancy math equation type things, you know, like integral from zero to infinity of that to that. And right, it looks, you know, proper, like you would see in calculus class, not weird ASCII representations to it. So yeah, it looks pretty awesome. It has the ability to like show or hide the code. You go to their website, you can see, like, there's a little example of here's a notebook, and then here's actually publication of it, which I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. What do you think, Brian?
I think this is excellent. I definitely want to try this out. I've been itching to write more long form, and
yeah,
doing something like this would be great.
I think it would, especially if you use Python to sort of express what you're working on or what you're doing, right? It's super, yeah. Super cool.
Yeah, and Pandoc, it's cool they're using Pandoc Markdown because, I mean, Markdown's amazing, but the Pandoc's flavors of Markdown, there's a bunch of cool extensions. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Also, final thing, you could apparently can embed things like Jupyter widgets, HTML widgets, and others to let people sort of interact with the page as well, which is also cool.
Yeah. Neat.
Yeah. All right. So cool. If this is your world, check it out.
Definitely. Okay. Next, I want to talk about Constable. So this is a simple little debugging tool. Looks like it's fairly new. Look at that.
Wow.
Constable.
Initial commit 4 days ago.
if you find yourself aimlessly adding print statements while debugging your code, this might be for you. So this is actually pretty neat. Oh,
I like it.
So you throw, like, in the example, you throw a decorator at constable.trace, and then you can throw in which variables you want to trace, and it just, like, it shows you some cool output of like what happens while you're running. You can walk through, and it does the changes to your, which line changed your variable and what did it change it to and all that sort of stuff. And it's
each line that changes, Brian, it prints out, like, as the variables change at any step, it'll say, here's what the new values are, which is cool, but it kind of describes it, which is awesome. It'll say, like, this equation ran, so now it's a new, this statement ran, so here's the value, this statement ran, so now here's the value. It's really good.
Yeah, it's fairly verbose, but and with a lot of spacing in here, but I think that's good, is because you're probably going to like throw it on just a couple functions to when you're debugging at the time and then pull it out later.
Use it in production.
Don't put it in production. I was wondering this too, so I forgot the name of the other tool that was kind of like this, and Mike Felder Fiedler says, I wonder how Constable compares to ice cream, and I think I would take this as Mike is volunteering to do a write-up of comparing Constable and ice cream.
Definitely. So, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, let us know when that's written up and we'll take a look. No. I think probably a lot of this is just a probably feel, like, how's it feel to you if it fits your workflow or not. This looks fun. So
yeah, this looks very fun. And both are new to me, so it's worth checking out.
Okay. Maybe, all right. And if Mike doesn't want to do it, maybe I'll take a look at comparing Constable.
Excellent. You could write it in Quarto.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently Mike didn't was surprised at the volunteering. So Constable for debugging print statements, or it's easier than print statements. Yeah. Nice. Cool.
I'm going to work it into my world. I think it looks good.
What do you got for us next?
Extra stuff. It's all I have. Only one extra thing.
Oh, we're done with our topics already?
On Blue. So
yeah, we are.
Time flies when you're having fun, you know, and you're, yeah, cool. Time flies. All right. So at least I'm done. I've got nothing else. How's that? So two pieces of news here. They're both the same piece of news. So Python 3.12.3 final is out, which comes with 1, 2, 3, 4 security updates. They don't sound like any sort of big deal. So I wouldn't like run run and patch it now or anything, but there are some things listed under security, so that's always worth thinking about. But there's also quite a few changes under built-in, under library. I mean, just gauging by the scrolling, I would say there's probably 50 or 60 changes. That's a big change for a .2 to .3.
Yeah. And why not? It's why not upgrade? So
absolutely. And I would just the other piece of news is that Python Bytes and all the other things are already running on 3.12.3. Just bump a number, kick off the Docker update, and boom, we're updated. Yeah, very nice to have that set up in place. Extras for you?
Just one that I like was excited to cover, but then like, okay, so I'll just talk about it. It's a couple of you appear to be offline. It's a couple weeks old, but pointers are going to be added to the standard library with PEP 4.1.2.4.
Yeah. What?
Apparently, Guido says, you know, why the hell not? Why not add pointers? This will also introduce, pointer literals, size of operators, and memory errors. Actually, I was perusing Reddit in Python and noticed this, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I noticed the date. It was 15 days ago. That would have been April Fool's, April 1st. So
rough.
I actually got
rough.
snagged on this. This is sort of funny, though.
This is funny. It even has the C syntax, like ampersand, to grab the pointer of a variable, a star to dereference the pointers and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Malloc.
Why not?
New size of operator.
The irony is everything in Python is a pointer. You just can't directly address them, right? You can't work with them that way.
Yeah.
No pass by rep. There's no pass reference, you know, the ampersand operator in C where like you can change the value of the pointer like within somewhere else and stuff.
What I love this example, spam equals star of none. That will seg fault, core dump. Good luck, kiddo.
Fine.
No, this is good. I enjoy it. So
yeah.
All right.
People comments are like, nice one. I believed it.
I believed it for a second, except for you know. Anyway. But there is a infamous pointers.py. So is that a real thing? Bringing the hell of pointers to Python.
From pointers import underscore.
That's funny. Anyway. All right. So
This is involved, right? This is in depth. It wasn't just a Reddit post. We've got like a whole GitHub repo.
Yeah.
Example. There's like a ton of code here. What are they doing?
This is awesome. Why does this exist? Anyway.
Liz out in the audience says, I would have believed it too.
One of the features is seg faults.
Always a good time.
Yeah. All right. So, that was funny, but do you have anything else funny for us?
I do. And it's very much in the same vein, although I don't think it's the same date. I think it's just more random. So check this out. Hennick from the Python community, who we speak about often, is here holding this award that is a Hugo. You know, Hugo, the not the static site generator, but the awards for...
Is it like a sci-fi award or something?
Yeah, for best sci-fi, best science fiction. So here's the thing. Very happy to accept a Hugo Award for my science fiction short story, The Day Python Packaging Made Everyone Happy. Good one, Hennick.
That is excellent. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Someday. And science fiction is a good angle here, right? Because science fiction is the sort of stuff that's not real now, but you can imagine maybe, but probably not. Yeah. At some point in the future, like the year 3000, we'll all be fine.
Yeah. Well, I don't believe anything until I get my hover skateboard.
I know.
Anyway.
It's going to be about is people crashing and falling over backwards on YouTube on the hover skateboard once we all get them.
What? Yeah. I'm just
like those ones with wheels now, but now when you hover, it'll be even more tippy.
Still fine. I'm trying to figure out how you turn on something that hovers.
I know.
But anyway. All right. Well, thanks. This was fun. Pretty quick episode, but Mike says hover skateboard uses pointers and seg faults. Yeah. So and then we can get Devin and our AI to create seg faults for us.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Not my fault. I didn't take down production. Devin did.
I wonder if the Segway is written in C. I wonder if Segways have seg faults.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
It would be fitting.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for showing up. If you want to, and if you're listening and you want to join the fun of talking with us while we're doing a podcast, head over to pythonbytes.fm and you can see what the schedule is for the next live episode. So
indeed. Thanks Brian.
Thank you. Bye.